passage that we've just heard from the book of Revelation is a vision. It's a vision about the fate of the human soul after we die. It is a vision about the end of all things, as that would appear from the point of view of one human soul. This vision is of what awaits on the other side of death's door. This is a door toward which we are all walking every moment of our lives. This is a door which, for most of us, we hope is far in the distance. Far in the distance on the other side of a life filled with joy, filled with laughter. But whether near or far, this is a door toward which we are, each of us, walking without ceasing for even a moment. We walk toward it while we are asleep. And we walk toward it while we make love. We walk toward it while we are falling ill. And we walk toward it while we are healthy and in our prime. We are marching ceaselessly toward death's door with a heartbeat's cadence, without stopping for even one moment. And what awaits us? What awaits us on the other side of that door? It is different from anything that we have known. And so it must be shown us in a vision. That is the purpose of a vision. That is what a vision always does in the Bible. It shows us something which is true, but categorically different from anything that we have known. And so it must be told us in symbol and metaphor, or else say nothing at all. A vision tells us something true, but categorically different from anything that we have known. We are given a vision in which we walk through death's door, and we find ourselves in the very throne room of God. And as we walk through the door, it is as if the entire world has passed through the door with us at that very moment, because there in that throne room is being settled not the fate of but one soul, but the fate of all the world's souls. All the world is standing there before God, and God is claiming what belongs to God. There is a taking of inventory going on here. There is a divvying up of Christmas presents on Christmas morning going on here. There is a handing out of people's orders from the takeout place going on here. There is a claiming by God of what belongs to God going on here. The first to be claimed, we are told, the first to be claimed by God are the people of Israel. It says that from the 12 tribes of Israel, 12,000 are claimed each. Now, if you forgive me a bit of mystical Hebrew numerology here, you have to understand that 12 is the biggest number that there is. It's complete. You can't add anything to it. If you add something to 12, it just goes back to zero. And so, when we see in this vision that from each of the 12 tribes of Israel, 12,000 are claimed, this is to say, all of the people of Israel are gathered close and touched and claimed and sealed by God. It is worth noting that we who claim the name of Christ, we are not the first or the most preeminent among those claimed by God. That falls to the people of Israel. It is for no better reason than that God promised it would be so. And it is for no less certain of a reason than that God promised it would be so. In the throne room of God beyond death's door, we are shown in a vision that God first claims as God's own the people of Israel, and God next claims those who needed to be redeemed while they yet lived. God claims next those who needed to be redeemed while they yet lived. It says that God claims next those who passed through great ordeal, those for whom life was struggle, those whose lives were checkered, those who suffered great ill and those who did great ill, those who had been abandoned as hopeless by everyone, including themselves, especially themselves, those who needed God to save them from the flames of perdition while they yet breathed. These are those next claimed by God. And they are claimed on the far side of death because God has already claimed them in life. Those who are lost, those who are wandering, they are most highly prized by God, most highly prized. We read the words of Jesus that when one single soul returns to God seeking after a new life, there is rejoicing in heaven greater than that for the righteous deeds of 100 righteous people. And so, immediately after God has claimed the people of Israel as God's own, God claims next those who, but for grace, would have been lost. God claims this one, who had lived for years on the streets addicted to drugs. God claims next that one who was imprisoned for terrible deeds, outrages that led their own parents to disown them lest they be stained with the moral taint of their own children. God claims next that one who suffered for years under an abusive partner, someone who made them forget their own worth. God claims next that one who, though he was righteous, was condemned for sedition and hanged on a cross to die, and whose last words were, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" You can see them walking into the embrace of God. They are wearing spotless robes woven from every fiber of their days. Their robes, which once had been soiled, which once had been torn, like something that had been caught in the very teeth of hell, they are spotless now because Jesus, too, entered into glory having been but a moment before caught in the very teeth of hell. The people of Israel are the first to be claimed. And the next to be claimed are those for whom no power on earth was great enough to deliver them, but who needed none other than the Almighty to redeem them. It is for no better reason than that God's heart desires most of all to save the lost. And it is for no less glorious a reason than that God's heart desires most of all to save the lost. In the throne room beyond death's door, the vision then becomes too enormous to be held in the mind's eye, because next to be claimed by God is a vast multitude so vast as to make mock of numbers or counting. There are those there who lived a century's span, and there are those there who were only ever a babe in arms, held in arms that did not wish to let them go. People who loved each other are there. People who hated each other are there. Whole nations and peoples and tribes and tongues are there. It is a multitude too vast to be counted. Among them are those from prehistory, from the misty millennia, when there was not yet the written word, when there was not yet the spoken word, when humankind walked like Adam and Eve upon a wild earth, an earth that had never before known the touch of plow or fence or border. It is a multitude so vast as to make mock of counting. And what binds them? What binds them together, these next to be claimed, is that all of them, each of them, had known the rumble of hunger. Each of them had known the hoarse shouting of thirst. Each had known the curse of pain. Each had known the sun's blazing heat and the terror of the dark at night. God claims next the mortals. The mortals. Those who know the sweetness of life, those who have feared the bitterness of death. God claims them because God too has known hunger. God too has known thirst. God has known cruelty. God has known what it is to live, and God has tasted what it is to die. God has claimed death itself. God has redeemed death itself. And the one who was like a lamb led to slaughter has become for us the shepherd, the one who can lead the flock out of the valley of the shadow of death, out of that valley of the shadow of death forever. Christ has become the shepherd to lead us mortals to drink from the spring of the water of life. In the throne room of God, beyond death's door, God first claims the people of Israel, because God does not break a promise. God next claims those who needed to be redeemed while they were yet alive, because God desires most of all to save the lost. And God next claims those who have known what it is to be mortal, because that is something that we share in common with our God. And so it is God's own death, I mean, we mortals, I mean. The book of Revelation is a vision. It is a vision. It is meant to communicate something true, but something which is categorically different from anything that we have known. And so it must be given to us in a vision. It must rely on symbol and metaphor, or else say nothing. It is meant to point us towards something. It is meant to point us towards something like this. Your beloved dead. Your beloved dead. The ones whose absence, the ones whose loss defines for you what death means. The one whose absence defines for you the sting that death holds. Your beloved dead. Hold them in your mind's eye. Hold them in your mind. For them, hunger shall be no more. Thirst shall be no more. The sun shall not strike them by day, nor night's shadows. Pain and death are no more. And it is the hand of God that wipes away their tears. And for you, and for you, when you shall walk through death's door, as we all shall, when you walk through death's door, you will enter into a place that is full of singing. A song that is like the sun shining full force. A song that shall catch up your voice into it, that shall catch up your spirit into it. A song that is singing, a song that they are singing even now. A song that always has been, a song that always shall be, that is awaiting your voice to join it. That song, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever and ever. Amen.